From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The revised presidential executive order banning travel from six mostly Muslim countries, called a watered-down version of the first by President Donald Trump, is now blocked from going into effect by two federal judges in Hawaii and Maryland as of Thursday morning. But in light of the movement to crack down on who is coming into the country, we're also seeing a crackdown on people who are already here, who may not be here legally. The efforts to find those people are called targeted enforcement operations. The Guardian reports that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE raids around the country, have left immigrant families frightened, so frightened that in some areas people say they've stopped driving, stopped shopping, stopped sending remittances to their countries of origin. They may even be foregoing medical care. To be clear, some of this is rumor-based, but there is evidence of stepped-up enforcement. The New York Times reports ICE officers waited outside a church shelter where undocumented people had gone to keep warm. That was in Virginia. At Kennedy Airport in New York, people arriving from San Francisco were required to show documents before they were allowed to get off the plane. Similar reports of increased raids on potentially undocumented people have come from states around the country, including Texas, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and North Carolina. There are also reports of school superintendents and local officials around the country holding forums to allay some of those fears. There are reports of that in California and New York. Joining us now to talk about how children in the Cape Fear region are affected are two people who work directly with them. Kate Nooner is Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. She's also a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in child and adolescent mental health trauma. Kate Nooner, welcome to Coastline.
It's good to be here.
Also joining us now, the Director of Student Support Services for New Hanover County Public Schools, Lisa Morris. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we'd like you to be part of this conversation. If you have a question about the impact of heightened enforcement on children in the Cape Fear region, or if you yourself are concerned about the impact on your family, or if you're glad to see the enforcement of laws on the books, you can reach us by email on this Thursday at coastline@whqr.org. Our phones today are dedicated to the pledge drive, so no calls. UNCW Professor Kate Nooner, over the course of an entirely different study, which I hope to hear a little bit about, you've discovered that you have contact with some of these kids who are frightened. For those listeners who haven't had any contact or haven't heard about this before locally, what are you hearing from these kids?
Well, both in my clinical work and in my research, which is not about immigration, but is trying to prevent underage high-risk drinking, like binge drinking. I'm asking kids about various things that are going on with them and also doing clinical interviews that ask about trauma and other serious life events. And during that, children have said that they have been bullied in school related to this, bullied by peers. They've also said that they have experience anxiety and depression, just wondering what's happened to their families. That they really are kind of uncertain about their future, even though, as far as I know, all of these children are American citizens.
You talk about bullying. That's mm-hmm. something that we haven't heard about before. What kind of bullying goes on around that issue?
They've just reported verbal things that other children have said to them, things such as, you're going to have to go back to where you're from, and taking a guess at what country it might be. And children said that they just hadn't heard that before. That wasn't things that kids said to them before. It never went beyond that, but it was something that was distressing to them.
And help us understand, just from through the eyes of a child mm-hmm. that might be struggling with that, mm-hmm. what is so terrifying about this? What are they afraid of?
Well, for children, your family network is really the center of your universe. It's where you learn about safety and also learn about how you become a good person in the world. But also, where they are in the community, their school, their peers, all of their activities are things that are really central to their lives. And the thought of having that disrupted is, you know, one of the most distressing things a kid can experience.
And disrupted how? Fearing that their parents might be deported? Fearing that they might be deported with their parents? What specifically are they afraid of?
They've said that they're afraid of both, even though, as I said, I don't know about their citizenship background or their parents, but they've just said that things seem very uncertain and they're scared that those types of things may happen.
And so it's possible then that some of these kids are concerned they'll come home from school one day and mom and dad won't be there.
Absolutely, for themselves. They've also mentioned that other friends they have, you know, at school and in the community, they're just worried about what will happen to them and their families.
Lisa Morris, what are you hearing around the new Hanover County school system as the director of student support services? Have you gotten these reports of bullying around immigration status?
We have not. Our bullying reporting is as normal as it is, and it's not around immigration issues at all. Some of our individual school counselors and school social workers may be hearing specifics, but we have not had any at the county level. I checked with our behavioral specialist who works on the prevention end as well as the intervention end of our bullying with the district folks, and she indicated that there was no uptick at all in bullying reporting around this issue.
What about kids who are just frightened or depressed? Are you seeing any kind of uptick in academic performance, I mean, in terms of academic performance dropping?
We haven't seen any academic performance issues at this point. We do have children who are facing all sorts of trauma, and our school counselors and social workers work with them on an individual basis and again, provide supports that they need in order to, you know, be academically successful at school.
Lisa Morris with New Hanover County Schools, is this a topic that would be really difficult for a child to bring to the attention of a school official, especially if they're concerned about the legal status of, say, their parents?
I hope not. I hope that we have instilled in children to find at least one adult in their buildings that they feel comfortable trusting and talking to. And again, we're not allowed to ask immigration status, so we don't.
You're not allowed to
correct.
Ask. Mm-hmm. I know that you have to educate kids anyway, and
absolutely.
We're going to get more into that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying you're actually not allowed to even ask about the status.
Correct. So hopefully, back to your original question, we've got children who have formed relationships with adults in that building, whether they're the school counselor, a social worker, a favorite teacher, a trusted administrator, whomever that is, a school psychologist, anyone who is on staff at these schools who have hopefully built the types of relationships that we encourage and that our folks are so good at.
How do you do that? If a child before hasn't been struggling academically or doesn't have any outer signs of difficulty at home or anything that would be a red flag, how then would school officials know whether a child had a relationship with a trusted adult in that setting?
That's a great question. We have school teams who meet regularly to look at kids who are struggling academically and or socially, emotionally, behaviorally. We have teams that talk about these children, that talk about the interventions that are in place for these children, whether they're working, whether the frequency needs to be increased, those types of things. And so they are forever monitoring children and their success.
You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. We're talking today about how the children of immigrants and potentially undocumented people are faring in the school system, how aware the school system is of any potential trouble there, as we've seen fears escalating around the country in this population. Lisa Morris, you've explained that the law says school officials are not allowed to ask even about the status. How do you know whether a child lives in the domicile and should go to New Hanover County Public Schools? How do they establish residence then?
That's a great question. There are several documents that can be presented. And then we also, if we have social workers or principals who are concerned that a child is not domiciled in this school district or within the particular school district that they are assigned, we have a residency person who goes out and does home visits and checks into those types of things as well.
Would that be frightening for a family to have somebody visit a home of, you know, again, parents who may be undocumented people here illegally? We know the child is still guaranteed the right to go to school and be educated, but is that intimidating?
I would imagine that it would be. I don't know that we've had any with regards to immigration status. Most of ours revolve around wanting to attend a specific school or be within the New Hanover County schools when they live outside of our county. And, of course, always some issues around athletics.
Kate Nooner of UNCW. There was a widely reported study in the 90s conducted by Kaiser Permanente that analyzed the impacts of trauma on people and what happened later in life. Can you tell us about that study?
Sure, I'd be happy to. That's known as the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, or the ACEs study. And as you said, it was conducted by Kaiser Permanente, as well as the Centers for Disease Control. There were over 17,000 children in this study, and one of the sites for the study was in North Carolina. So there's local children who were involved. And what this study was really looking at was seeing if people, in terms of their health, in terms of their mental health, were impacted by serious things that happened in childhood. And these things include divorce, and can also include things like serious separation from parents, which could happen related to immigration.
And we're going to have to continue with that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking about how the stepped-up enforcement of immigration around the country is affecting children. When we come back from this break, we'll be joined by a representative from the North Carolina Justice Center and FAIR, the Federal American for Immigration Reform. The phones are not available right now due to our pledge drive, but you can reach us by email on this Thursday at Coastline at whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we're talking about how the appearance of an increase in ICE raids and stepped up enforcement of immigration law is impacting kids in the Cape Fear region. Joining us now by phone, Ira Melman, Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. Ira Melman, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us now, Matt Ellenwood, Director of North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. Matt Ellenwood, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rachel.
And still with us, Kate Nooner, Associate Professor of Psychology at UNCW. She's also a licensed clinical psychologist. If you have a question or a comment about how this heightened enforcement is affecting kids locally, reach out to us via email on this Thursday at coastline at whqr.org. Our phones are hijacked by the pledge drive. Kate Nooner, I want to revisit this Kaiser Permanente study from the 90s that you said included some children from North Carolina. Tell us what that study concluded, essentially.
Absolutely. And it was adults asked about their childhood experiences, but those from North Carolina. And what it really concluded is that, first of all, having adverse childhood experiences is very common. About two-thirds of us have experienced an adverse childhood event, which is something serious, not just kind of an average everyday problem. And then about 25% of people have experienced three or more. And when you get into that range is when you really start to see really serious health problems and mental health problems, things like heart disease and cancer rates go way up. Also things like...
In adults.
Also things like suicide and alcoholism go way up. But all this is relating to the adverse experiences that they had as a child.
And what qualifies in it as an adverse event in childhood?
So divorce can count, especially if it's acrimonious. Also separation from a parent by jail or something like deportation certainly counts, as well as things like child abuse and neglect.
Ira Melman of FAIR, explain to us, first of all, what FAIR is briefly, what solid immigration reform would look like to your organization.
Well, our organization looks at immigration reform from the perspective of the American people. What is generally lost in the debate is that the immigration policies of the United States exist to serve and protect the interest of the American people. And that has been absent from the way we've carried it out for a very long time in this country. So we believe that immigration policy needs to protect the vital interest of the American people. We understand it is always in the interest of immigrants to immigrate. Nobody comes here unless it's in their interest to be here. The question is, what impact does it have on people's jobs in this country? What impact does it have on schools in North Carolina, on all sorts of things that are concerned to people around the country and can have a profound impact on their lives? And that's why we need to enforce laws, even though sometimes it is difficult. We've been talking here about, the impact on children whose parents violate laws without ever mentioning the culpability of the people who consciously decided to break those laws and put themselves and their families in that situation in the first place. In no other area of law do we hold the enforcement accountable and not the people who break the laws.
Matt Ellenwood. If the law regarding students is so clear, and as we heard Lisa Morris with the new Hanover County Public School System say, school officials are not even allowed to ask students about their immigration status, why do you have to work so hard to get kids in North Carolina into a school? What are some of the barriers to that?
Well, a lot of times it has to do with the unique family circumstances that a lot of these children have, where you absolutely have a right, all children have a right to enroll in school regardless of immigration status, but then there's a question of which school. And the way that we determine which school children are going to attend is it's presumed that they are domiciled wherever their parents live, and the domicile of the parents ends up dictating which school we choose. So when you have a traditional nuclear family, you don't really notice that, but when you have people living with sponsors or aunts and uncles, different family members and things like that, it can be a little more complicated when it comes time to enroll in school. So, for example, you could have a child whose parent is not physically here, who lives in a different country. The child may be an American citizen or may not, but they're here without their parents, and they're living with a sponsor or a relative. And so then when they go to enroll in school, there are a number of barriers that come up as a result of the paperwork that they have to do. So you have to have a lease. You have to have a certified copy of your birth certificate or another competent and verifiable proof of your age. You have to have a photo ID of your caregiver adult or your parent. So each one of those things, you have to also have to fill out some affidavits and things like that if you're going to be living with someone other than your parent. So when you put all those things together, that paperwork can be a substantial hurdle for a refugee child, for example, who may not have all those documents with them. So we see substantial delays in the enrollment process in those situations, which can have a substantial effect on the child's education going forward. If they miss weeks or months of school, it's incredibly difficult to make up for that.
So that could be considered another adverse event for a child, Kate Nooner, missing months of school just because they've got these technical barriers or logistical barriers to getting in.
Certainly missing months of school could be considered neglect in terms of not providing education. Absolutely.
Ira Melman, you talk about the culpability of the parents in this case. What, then, is the answer in a situation like this? Because, yeah, I don't think anyone can argue the culpability, but what do you do? Are you advocating for deporting the parents of these kids and letting the kids stay here? Or what is FAIR's answer to this?
Well, the first thing we should be doing is deterring people from violating the laws in the first place. We have these laws in place, but they haven't been enforced. We have not enforced laws against employers who take a labor subsidy at the expense of everybody else by hiring low-wage illegal workers and then passing the social costs, like the cost of education, along to everybody else. So that ought to be the first thing. But we also need to make it clear that if we identify you and apprehend you, we are going to remove you from the United States, that children are not human shields. Just because you have kids doesn't mean that you are immune from the consequences of your actions, just as you would be for any other violation of the law. If any of us decided we didn't want to pay our taxes because we could do better for our families that way, the law wouldn't say, oh, but you have kids, therefore we're not going to enforce the law against you. We just have to get back to that basic principle that people are responsible for the consequences of their actions on their children. And nobody is suggesting that we need to go busting down doors or engage in mass deportations. But we enforce our laws in a sensible way. If we make it clear you're not going to get a job because we're policing the employers and making it clear to them it's going to hurt if we catch them hiring illegal aliens, if we do other things that cut off the incentives for people to come to the United States illegally, then, you know, the problem over time will begin to dissipate on its own accord.
Are you saying, Ira Melman, that you don't think parents of kids should be deported? I was confused about that. Because if you're talking about going after someone who doesn't pay taxes, you're not talking about ripping a family apart.
Well, in some cases, you might if the parent ends up going to jail or people are thrown out of their homes. But no, we should deport people when we catch them. You know, the parents do have the option of taking their kids with them when they return to their home countries. Every country recognizes the foreign-born offspring of their citizens to be citizens of those countries. It is disruptive to the child's life. There's no question about it. But again, we have to get back to who created the situation in the first place, and we also have to understand the purpose of our immigration laws in the first place. The purpose is not to be mean and keep people out. The purpose is to protect the interests of the American people, because Americans lose jobs, they lose wage opportunities, they lose access to benefits and services, their tax dollars are affected. Everything that's important to them is affected by illegal immigration. And when you have it on the scale that we now have it, 12, 13 million people living in the country illegally, it affects a lot of people in adverse ways every single day.
So if you're talking about deporting the parents of it, let's say the child is an American citizen born here, you deport the parents and you acknowledge that would have an adverse impact on the child, are we not setting ourselves up then for damage down the road? I mean, I'm thinking of health consequences, as Kate Nooner has talked about from this Kaiser Permanente study. Isn't that a cost for society to bear, possibly not doing well in a school setting or not doing well in life? Then we're looking at the welfare system or the prison system. Isn't that a larger cost?
Well, in most cases, I think responsible parents would probably take their kids with them back to their home countries. But ultimately it is up to the parents to decide this. But, you know, to do otherwise is, again, to set up children as human shields. You can't touch me because you're going to harm my children. And if we start applying that logic to all areas of law enforcement, we're going down a very slippery slope here. You can't simply say, well, if you come to the United States illegally and you have kids, we're going to allow you to stay because if we enforce the law against you, it's going to affect your kids. Yes, it is. All of us as parents make decisions, and our decisions affect our children, the good ones and the bad ones, and we are responsible, not society and not the law.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about how the recent stepped-up enforcement of immigration law targeting undocumented people is affecting children in the public school system. With us today, Kate Nooner, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. She's also a licensed clinical psychologist. Matt Ellenwood, Director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. And Ira Melman, Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. Matt Ellenwood, can you talk about some of the cases that you're currently working on? And of course, we know that you can't name names, but who are some of the children of immigrants that you're trying to help right now get into school?
Yeah, I think one example that shows how these families can really be stuck between a rock and a hard place, and maybe it's not so easy to just go back to where they were from, is I've dealt with students who are, and their families were from war-torn countries, places that were really decimated by natural disasters. And in one case, we had a family who was here from Honduras, where the parents were ultimately deported, and the child ended up having difficulty enrolling in school as a result, and ultimately made the land crossing back to Honduras by themselves, coming from the United States. So you can see there's really no right answer for some of these children who are placed in that position where they're being separated from their families. There's often a real good reason why they left the place where they're coming from, and in some places, they could be an actual danger when they're returning. And of course, our immigration law accounts for that type of situation. But it really can be a very difficult situation for a child to be separated from their family. And of course, I do want to mention that the reason why all children have the right to enroll in school is because of a case called Plyler versus Doe that it was decided on some legal grounds on equal protection, involving the Equal Protection Clause. But there were also a lot of factual determinations made. And really, the Supreme Court came to the conclusion that it doesn't make a lot of sense to have these children are going to be here anywhere. They've come here for reasons that were not their choice. And so, you know, it doesn't make sense to create an underclass of uneducated or potentially illiterate folks who are going to be living in our community since they're here. And that did weigh into the Supreme Court's decision that we're really better off educating the children that are going to be here and living in our communities.
And in that ruling, is that logic about for humanitarian reasons, or is it economic, or both?
I think it's both. I think it's yes. You can see it with the concentrations of poverty that we have in some of the cities in our country. That's an inherently dangerous situation for your community if you have a large group of folks who are failing to receive an education, who are more likely to need public assistance, who are less likely to be able to find jobs and support their families, pay taxes, and things like that. So, because it involves children, I think that's just an inherently sympathetic group, and the Supreme Court's ruling really understood that this is a group of folks that's here really not because of decisions that they've made, and that they need to be educated for their own benefit as well as for ours as a community in our communities.
Professor Kate Nooner, how resilient are children?
Well, I think it's a misnomer that a lot of people think that children are very resilient. Actually, they are not. The majority of mental health problems that children have actually persist into adulthood if they are not treated. And looking back on adults, the majority of adults' mental health problems started in their childhood or adolescent years. And so certainly, having traumatic events happen, having families torn apart, is something that can cause, lifelong implications that, as you were talking about, related to the challenges with education, also related to mental health and health in general, can be extremely costly over the lifetime.
Can you talk about some of the big identifiers of a child's success? Do we know that? Do we know what makes children successful later in life?
Absolutely. We certainly do know many of the things that make children safer and more successful later in life. The CDC talks about having stable, safe, and nurturing environments and relationships. And so this can include having a stable school, having a stable home, but also, your family being a big part of that. As well as for children, their community is really a big part of their stable relationships. And when those are in place, children succeed.
You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about how the recent stepped-up enforcement of immigration law targeting undocumented people is affecting children in the public school system in the Cape Fear region. With us today, Kate Nooner, Associate Professor of Psychology at UNCW. She's also a licensed clinical psychologist. Matt Ellenwood, Director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. And Ira Melman, Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. Kate Nooner, what would help kids who are frightened now, who are depressed, who are so concerned that they might come home and find their parents gone? Specifically, what can school officials do to minimize the trauma they might be experiencing, and what can people in public at large do?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Lisa spoke to some of the things that schools do related to monitoring, related to having a person at school that the schools can go to, and I think New Hanover County does an excellent job of that. Also within the community, certainly having more access to mental health resources that people can use both for parents and for kids. A lot of the work as, a clinical psychologist that specializes in children, a lot of the work done with children who have mental health problems is done with parents to help change the environment. But this is also a great opportunity for communities to be allies, to provide spaces of support, and to really reach out to children who may be struggling.
Ira Melman, you acknowledge the law states that it's incumbent upon school districts to educate a child regardless of that child's immigration status or his or her parent status if the child lives in the domicile of that district. Are you a supporter of that idea? Can you sort of explain where you stand on that? If FAIR could take over that policy, what would FAIR do?
Well, our view is that the immigration laws should not be enforced at the schoolhouse door, the emergency room door, places like that. What we need to do is to discourage parents from coming to the United States illegally in the first place and bringing their children here. That really ought to be the way we go about enforcing immigration laws. And we haven't been doing that because we've been offering all kinds of rewards and incentives for people to violate our laws. And so, you know, we have kids here. Yes, they have to be educated. But we also have to remember that very often it is other people's kids who are harmed. And it tends to be the kids who are in most danger in the first place, the kids who are kind of in marginal schools. These are the schools that bear the greatest impact. It's not the schools in the wealthy districts that get affected. It is schools in lower income areas of the country that are most heavily affected. Resources have to be diverted from the needs of those kids to providing bilingual education and other services that are needed by kids who are coming into the country. And again, this gets us back to why we have immigration laws in the first place. It is not, as I said, to be mean and keep people out. It is because we recognize that it has an effect on people here in the United States, and often a very profound one. And the Supreme Court decision, by the way, that established this, Plyler versus Doe, it was a very narrow 5-4 decision. And in that decision, the justices made it very clear that the case that this involved in Tyler, Texas, they did not believe that the impact posed a substantial burden to the community. If you look at some school districts around the country, you could probably make a credible argument that it is a substantial burden to the community. But nevertheless, the best way to deal with this is to discourage people from coming and remaining in the first place. Therefore, we would not have to deal with that, all these downstream consequences.
So what you're talking about is disincentivizing people to come, but then so many of the populations that we're seeing larger influxes from are people coming from war-torn countries, as Matt Ellenwood alluded to earlier. We're going to come back, Ira Melman, and follow up on that point. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about the national immigration conversation and the heightened enforcement's effect on children in our region. UNCW Professor Kate Neuner, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
When we return in 90 seconds, we'll welcome back New Hanover County Schools Director of Student Support Services, and you can still join the conversation on this Thursday via email at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're exploring how children are faring as increased enforcement of immigration laws and the fears for those who are undocumented are on the rise across the country. With us now is Lisa Morris. She's the Director of Student Support Services for New Hanover County Public Schools. Welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you.
We also have Matt Ellenwood, Director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project, and Ira Melman, Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. He's joining us by phone on this Thursday. And we'd like to hear from you. Just a few minutes left in this show to get your question or comment in. You can email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Ira Melman, explain how you've made it clear that one of FAIR's goals is to reduce the number of immigrants that are coming here, particularly illegal immigrants, by enforcing the laws that are already on the books and making it clear that it won't be a good outcome if you break the law. How does the humanitarian element factor into the way FAIR develops policy? Is that a factor at all? When you think about refugees from Syria who are coming here, or is that a consideration?
Of course it is. Look, we have responsibilities to try to help people who are in peril, whether it's in Syria and Central America. But we also have to recognize that the numbers are growing exponentially. You know, there are millions and millions of people around the world. There are societies that are failing. You have these collapsing states. And that simply trying to relocate everybody from one of those countries to a country like the United States is not going to be a long-term solution. What we need to do is work with the international community to try to rectify some of the issues that drive people to leave these countries in the first place, and recognizing that we have a limited capacity to do that. But simply saying that every time some society fails, we are going to be responsible for taking all the people and relocating them them to the United States or some other country, it simply cannot continue. And we're seeing responses to that, not just here in the United States, but around the world. People are saying, look, we have empathy, we have compassion, but there's a limit to what we can do, and we have to recognize that we live in a world that has limits.
One immigration activist told WTVD, this is a TV news station in Raleigh, that she understands people who break the law shouldn't be exempt from punishment, but she calls deportation cruel and unusual punishment. Is that a fair description, Ira Melman?
Mm-hmm. Not at all. That is precisely what the law prescribes. These are laws that have been developed over many, many years, passed by Congress, signed by a whole range of presidents. This is the prescribed penalty for being in the country illegally. We seem to have developed this idea that the only way you can get deported in this country is if you go on to commit some kind of really serious crime. And that is not the case. The law is very, very clear. If you are in this country in violation of the law, you are subject to deportation.
Matt Ellenwood, director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project, where would you like to see policy in North Carolina go?
In terms of the enrollment of children?
Yes.
I think there's a couple things. We need a little bit of clarity. I think what some school districts have done is put out resolutions sort of explaining that schools are welcoming to all children and that they are obligated to educate all children who are here. And I think that sort of thing can help create a more welcoming environment that can help deal with the uncertainty that's out there right now, where we've heard about things like ICE enforcement actions kind of near bus stops and places where it makes children nervous. There's a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of confusion. I mean, we can see it. The law is always in a state of flux now. We know we've got these executive orders, which are being then held up in court and things like that. So it's very difficult, I think, for the average family to follow where things are. And so the more schools can do to affirmatively create a welcoming environment, I think the better off we're going to be. Because what we are seeing is some people are sort of living in the shadows and are less likely to come forward and try to enroll in school and hand over a bunch of documents and things to that identify who they are. And anything that we can do that might not be policy as much as just sort of procedures of trying to make sure we're doing outreach and letting people know that they're still eligible to attend school.
And we have heard reports of school districts in states like California and New York doing forums, for instance, where they educate parents about, you know, what could happen, what the law is, what they need to know, and the fact that the school system itself won't be coming after anybody. Lisa Morris, is there enough of a population here for New Hanover County to consider doing something to allay the fears of parents and their kids?
Again, because we can't ask whether these children are documented or not, we don't know how much of a population there is.
There was a recent Day Without Immigrants. That was a national effort, but it did impact New Hanover County schools. Can you tell us how much of an impact it had?
About a 2% impact on our attendance for that time of the year. We typically have 94% attending at that point in the school year, and we had about 92%.
And approximately how many children is that?
About 500.
500 mm-hmm. children mm-hmm. may have stayed away from school because it was a day without immigrants.
May have. We've also had rampant flu and stomach virus, so we take that into consideration as well, but yes.
So has this conversation arisen within just among school officials at all as something to keep on the radar, or has this just been completely under the radar and strictly in the realm of kids who may have parents who are undocumented?
I think we continue to try to be focused on, you know, students' well-being, both academically and socially and behaviorally and emotionally. And we are very watchful and listening and keeping up as everyone else is to try to stay ahead of this. But in the meantime, we will continue to educate all children who come our way.
So, Matt Ellenwood, what are some of the things that you think school systems might do to make parents feel more comfortable and allay some of those fears?
Well, I think it is difficult because as you mentioned, you don't really know exactly where folks are located. So I think that it's hard to do outreach in that sort of environment. But certainly we've seen places where they have, like you said, community meetings in different areas where we think there might be larger populations of immigrant students. sort of going over what their rights are and training them that way. And I think that would be helpful. And in the enrollment context, I think there is some confusion over, you know, all the different documents that are required to enroll can pose barriers for people, not just immigrant students. I've seen it with military children who, you know, where they move really frequently. And in one case, somebody didn't have their birth certificate because it was in Afghanistan and had been lost in the travel plans for a couple of weeks, and they had trouble enrolling. And so it would be nice if there was some sort of clarity on what's the bottom line of, you know, we need to enroll children, even if they may lack one or two of these documents, and then collect it after they've been enrolled, so that way they don't miss those days of school. And that's what when you look at the guidance from the Department of Justice, it does say that that's a best practice to do that, but it's something that's not done uniformly across schools.
Ira Melman, you say the immigrant population has a negative impact on public schools, and you say that that negative impact specifically happens with schools that are already stressed, high poverty schools, high minority schools, which in New Hanover County tend to be the same thing. Lisa Morris, is that a fair assessment? Do you think that the population of students here who might be kids of undocumented immigrants are actually a drain on the school system financially?
Again, without being able to know who these children are, it's kind of hard to assess that. So I don't know.
Ira Melman, how did you assess it?
Well, look, in this country, it costs about $11,000 a year to educate a child in a public school. And that doesn't include bilingual education. It doesn't include school nutrition programs. If you add those things, it can be significantly more. What we know about the illegal population is they tend to earn very low wages. Probably about half of them are working off the books and don't have payroll taxes deducted. So, you know, you may be talking about a family with $35,000 a year in income that's taxed only in terms of sales taxes and other incidental taxes. It can't possibly cover the cost of educating one child, much less multiple children who might be in the schools. So, you know, one of two things happens. Either the school systems have to raise more money from the community, and we know that that's not politically popular, or the money that's available has to be spread more thinly, and other people suffer as a consequence. Look, I mean, it's not the fault of the children that they need an education. It is the fault of the government for not recognizing that children need an education and making that one of the reasons why we enforce our laws in a sensible way and try to deter people from violating the law in the first place. That's what we should have been doing all along. Now we're seeing that we're doing a little bit more of that. There is a reasonable amount of enforcement now being exercised by the new administration. And hopefully that will change people's mindset. If people perceive that the laws are going to be enforced, they are going to behave accordingly. Fewer are going to come, and over time, many who are here will decide, you know what, it's not worth sticking around. We are going to go home.
You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about how the recent stepped-up enforcement of immigration law targeting undocumented people is affecting children in the public school system. With us today, Lisa Morris. She's the director of student support services in New Hanover County Public Schools. Matt Ellenwood, director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. And Ira Melman, he's media director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. You have a couple minutes left to get your question or comment in at coastline@whqr.org. Lisa Morris with New Hanover County Public Schools. How does the school system plan for support needs like English as a second language classes? How do you know from year to year what you're going to need in terms of those special populations?
That's a great question. Our instructional department looks at allocating those teachers that are in assistance and family support that are in those programs, look at allocating those out by needs, and those children that are identified for needing those type of services.
And how much does that cost the New Hanover County Public School System?
I have no idea. That's a great question. I don't work with the allocation of those positions at all, so I'm not sure.
Matt Ellenwood, what would the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project say about the financial impact of this population on public school systems? We know that in this state, especially recently, we've struggled just getting teacher pay up to, you know, some sort of reasonable, livable wage.
Right. We're pretty far off that national average of 11,000 that was mentioned. We're down closer to the about 9,000 here. Well, I think it's I'm hopelessly biased because of the positive experiences I've had working with these families. And I'm really a strong believer in the value of diversity in the educational context. There's an amazing amount of research out there about really all forms of diversity. The value it has on children's education is really profound. And that's why we see it as a compelling interest in things like Supreme Court cases involving universities and their policies for admission. So it really is something that does have a big benefit for kids. I've seen schools that had things like dual language immersion programs where you want to have about half the kids who are able to speak a foreign language, and that can be really beneficial to folks. The children I've worked with are people who have been here for their entire lives. It's the only country that they know as home. In order to do things like deferred action for childhood arrivals, the legal status that happened a few years ago, they had to provide all sorts of documentation, and my mind was just blown by how these were children who had worked, when they became teenagers, worked multiple jobs, who graduated from high school and did all the things that we'd want our own children to do. So I'm kind of biased because I've just had such positive experiences that I look at it like it's a real benefit to the education system.
You're talking about your personal experiences. Yes. There's a lot of research out there that corroborates your conclusion about that. In October of 2015, not that long ago, NPR reported that contrary to the argument that sending white kids to majority-minority schools is essentially sacrificing the quality of their education, research does show otherwise. It shows that white students might actually benefit. And a number of reports, a number of studies were cited in this, including a federal report that shows the test scores of white students don't fall. They may work harder and smarter. A different study out of Columbia Business School shows when you have people from the social majority in a diverse environment, they work harder and focus on the task more. They think about problems more broadly. And they also may become more empathetic and less prejudiced. Ira Melman, are those benefits?
Well, yes, and to some degree they are benefits. But look, I mean, we have a very diverse society, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't enforce our immigration laws. There have to be limits, there have to be rules, because they are there to protect the interests of other people. Diversity is in itself an inherently a neutral factor. It is what we make of it. It can be very positive or it can be very divisive. It really is what we make of it. And we have diversity in this country. Nobody is suggesting we shouldn't have diversity in this country, but we also have to recognize that there are limits to what social institutions can manage and that it has an impact on the lives of people. And very often it is the lives of people who can least afford to be making these sacrifices.
We have just a couple of minutes left. Lisa Morris with New Hanover County Public Schools. What would you say to folks who are concerned? Final thought, what would you like to leave them with?
Just know that we're taking the best care of their children that we do for all of our children. Again, we're very concerned not only about their academic achievement, but their social and emotional well-being as well. And we work very hard, and we have an amazing staff of people who care deeply about children and who are very good at what they do, taking care of those children.
If there was a child in high school listening now who had both parents who are here illegally and was very concerned and wanted to reach out for some help, are they putting their parents at risk by doing that?
Not from the school district's perspective, because, again, we are not allowed to ask about...
If they tell you, what happens? Are you then required to contact law enforcement?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, that has not been discussed. And, again, we serve the children that come to us, and that we are not... In the practice of making those kinds of decisions.
That's this edition of Coastline. Ira Melman, Lisa Morris, Matt Ellenwood, and Professor Kate Nooner, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast on iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. Join us for Coastline live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.